चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
So when Svatara Maharaj started this course a few years ago, it was actually Bhagavatam course, but he always had the vision that he wants also Bhakti Shastri course to be developed. And now we are starting finally first year of this Shastra Chakshus course. And as Priti Moshe mentioned, Svatara Maharaj had this goal. He wanted by the end of the course, the devotees that are attending, So Svatara Maharaj wanted all the devotees that are attending the course to attain the level of Nishta, as Priti Moshe mentioned. And I remember another thing Svatara Maharaj said in the beginning, that the goal of this course is to revive what is called Svata Siddha Gyan, the knowledge that is actually innate in everybody's heart, because the soul is Sat Chitananda, and we have all the spiritual knowledge inside our heart. So by purifying ourselves by in the association of the devotees in the holy dham and studying the scriptures, we actually are supposed to revive this knowledge and to experience the bliss of Krishna consciousness and our eternal relationship with Krishna. So this is the goal of this course, to purify ourselves and to realize ourselves as blissful eternal servants of Sri Sri Radha Krishna. And because I assume nobody read the introduction of Vishupanishad for today, so today we'll just go through the introduction, and from tomorrow we'll start to discuss a little bit more here and there some points that are important. So as we all heard, we'll have four lectures a week, and you are required to carry this book with you, Vishupanishad. You have to, if you don't have, you have to buy one, carry it with you, read ahead a chapter or a mantra, and it's always nice to have it with you during the class, because you can have, you can check out, you can read. Some of you will be also asked to read from time to time. So better carry the book with you. And so we start with the introduction, which is called Teachings of the Vedas, delivered as a lecture by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada on October 6th, 1969 at Conway Hall, London, England. Ladies and gentlemen, or Prabhus and Matajis, but Srila Prabhupada actually mentioned that what is the definition of a devotee. He said the devotees are perfect ladies and gentlemen. So it's not wrong. Ladies and gentlemen, today's subject matter is the teachings of the Vedas. What are the Vedas? The Sanskrit verbal root of Veda can be interpreted variously, but the purport is finally one. So there are many meanings. In Sanskrit, we know there are so many meanings of the words. But Srila Prabhupada says here, the final, ultimate meaning is finally one, just one. It's like Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, several times he says, these are the opinions of different people in Bhagavatam also, but this is my opinion. So the final opinion is the opinion of Krishna and his representative. So what are the Vedas according to Srila Prabhupada? Veda means knowledge. Any knowledge you accept is Veda. For the teachings of the Vedas are the original knowledge. So this is very interesting and serious claim Srila Prabhupada makes here. Let's read it once again. Veda means knowledge. Any knowledge you accept is Veda. For the teachings of the Vedas are the original knowledge. So the implication of this statement is very serious. That means, even if you don't accept, if you don't believe in God, if you don't accept the authority of any scripture, what to speak about Vedas, still, the knowledge you have, the knowledge that you're using to achieve your goals in the material world, this knowledge is Veda. Even if you're not aware of this. What does it mean? That means that even without knowing, we're using the knowledge given by God in the beginning of creation. If anything in this world works, if we're successful in any field of activity, this is because we are using unconsciously, or consciously, better, the principles that God actually created and on which He created this world. So any knowledge we're using, there is no knowledge independent from the Vedas. This is the implication. So if whether we will be able to make this connection back, to trace the knowledge, every knowledge we use in our day-to-day life back to the Vedas, this is another question. Not everybody is able to do this. To be able to do this, it requires a high level of realization in Krishna consciousness. But at least theoretically, we should know, we should be convinced of what Srila Prabhupada says here. Any knowledge you accept is Veda. That means, in a sense, stealing, for example, is not good. Everybody knows stealing is not good. But how to steal? There is a proper way to steal. It's also kind of science. So if you want to steal, there are a few things. First, the best thing is that nobody knows that you stole anything away. Nobody knows. You steal something, nobody understands that something has been stolen. That's first class. So you can just go on with your life, enjoy the thing you have stolen. So next best is they understand that it's stolen, but they don't know who stole it. So they cannot actually make the connection between the stealing and you. So the second best. And the third best is they know something has been stolen, they know that you did the criminal act, but they cannot punish you. They're not in a position to punish you. That's third best. So stealing means you take something away from someone else, that belongs to someone else, but you get away with it. You're not punished. So this is the science behind it. And this science is given by God. This is creation. This creation is God's creation, so He establishes all these rules. So even if you want to be successful in stealing, you have to follow these rules that Krishna creates. So this is the implication of this statement. Vedas are the original knowledge. And any knowledge you accept is Veda. Doesn't matter if you believe in Veda or not. Yes?
Can you give an example on modern speculative atomic science?
Atomic science meaning
like
quantum,
what is inside
quantum
the
mechanics.
Oh.
Yes, of course. For example, if you want to become a scholar, be famous in this field of whatever it is, whatever it is. You have to follow certain rules. isn't it? You should apply for university, then you should finish. You should follow certain discipline inside this institution. You should follow authority there. Is that correct? You should follow the teacher, the professor. They teaching, you follow. Then, when you reach the phase of writing your PhD, then they tell you how to do it. If you don't do it according to your professor, how they call this, advisor or whatever it is, if you don't write it in a certain way, then you cannot become a PhD. So you have to follow the principle of authority, following the authority behind this scene there that they have. So this principle got established. You have to follow authority. If you want to be successful, you have to follow. It doesn't matter which field you want to achieve success. You have to follow authority. And then also while you are doing this, you have to be self-controlled. There are so many things you like to do at the moment. You don't want to sit 6 hours in the library and study physics or whatever it is. You don't feel like it, but you have to control your mind. You have to renounce all these thoughts and focus on your goal. So this is determination. What was it? There are two things. Focus and determination, they bring result. This is Vedic principle also. So you cannot escape these things. Everywhere you go, you have to follow the rules that Krishna established for this world. And then only then you have success in any field. So these are the principles established in the Vedas. Is this good enough? In the conditioned state, our knowledge is subjected to many deficiencies. The difference between a conditioned soul and a liberated soul is that the conditioned soul has four kinds of defects. So what are these four kinds of defects? You know? First?
Imperfect senses.
Imperfect senses.
Then,
excuse me?
Propensity to cheat.
Okay.
Cheating
propensity. Then third?
Subject to illusion.
Subject to illusion. Okay. And cheating propensity was much mentioned. And?
Mistakes.
Okay. The difference, okay. The first defect is that he must commit mistakes. So here Srila Prabhupada makes this comparison between the perfect knowledge of the Vedas that we attain through the descending process from the spiritual world and our own erroneous ideas about the material world and the spiritual world and God. So the Vedic knowledge is perfect and our ability to know is imperfect. And it is imperfect in four ways. First, we must commit mistakes. For example, in our country, Mahatma Gandhi was considered to be a very great personality, but he committed many mistakes. Srila Prabhupada mentioned another mistake. Mahatma Gandhi, even at the last stage of his life, his assistant warned, "Mahatma Gandhi, don't go to the New Delhi meeting. I have some friends and I have heard there is danger." But he did not hear. He persisted in going and was killed. Even great personalities like Mahatma Gandhi, President Kennedy, there are so many of them, make mistakes. To err is human. This is one defect of the conditioned soul. So this is the first problem if we try to come up with some ideas about the goal of life and about our situation in this world, is that we make mistakes. And even if we are very sincerely believing in our opinion, it still can be wrong. It doesn't prove anything that we are fully committed to our beliefs. Like the communists in my country, they were, many of them were fully committed, and they had very high ideals. And they firmly believed that this is the proper way to do things, and still they were proven they were wrong. And so many people suffered because of this. But it doesn't prove anything if you're convinced. Because we are human, and humans, and to err is human. Another defect, to be illusioned. Illusion means to accept something which is not Maya. Maya means what is not. Everyone is accepting the body as a self. If I ask you what you are, you will say, I am Mr. John, I am a rich man, I am this, I am that. All these are bodily identifications. But you are not this body. This is illusion. This is another big problem in the world today. Is that people usually they don't make this distinction between what is explained in Bhagavad Gita in the 13th chapter, Kshetra and Kshetragya. They cannot understand which is what is what, and they think I'm the field of activity, and I'm not the knower of the field. They cannot make the distinction between the soul and the body. And because they are in illusion, they treat everybody around themselves, everybody else, they treat in the same way. And this has been noted by many scholars and philosophers. People tend to deal with everybody else as, say, part of their field of activities. They're just like objects of their sense identification. They don't consider anybody else as a person, as a soul. It's just another object that I can grab and control and enjoy. And they deal like this even with the living beings, mainly with the humans. What to speak about animals and okay, other creatures. So this is a big problem, because in this way they don't have any real relationship with anybody. They go directly down to the level of anamaya, or mostly pranamaya consciousness. The only thing that exists in creation is me and my senses, and the goal of life is to connect my senses with sense objects. And if these sense objects are people living alive, thinking, feeling, it doesn't matter. Most important thing is I have to enjoy. So this is a problem coming from this misidentification, to be in illusion, to think that you're the body. And the third defect is the cheating propensity. Everyone has the propensity to cheat others. Although a person is fool number one, he poses himself as very intelligent. Although it is already pointed out that he is in illusion and makes mistakes, he will theorize. I think this is this, and this is this. But he does not know even his own position. He writes books of philosophy, although he is defective. That is the disease. That is cheating. So you notice here Srila Prabhupada doesn't use cheating in a sense of cheating people for money. It's not the biggest problem. The biggest problem, big problem is to cheat people concerning the goal of life, and to pose as someone who is very learned, and to preach to them. Although you yourself, you don't know who you are, Srila Prabhupada says here. But he does not even know his own position. That means if we don't have firm stand in Sambandha, if we don't know who we are and what is our relationship with anything, everything else, then our process and our goal won't be correct. So this is the first thing to establish Sambandha Jnana. And lastly, our senses are imperfect. We are very proud of our eyes. Often someone will challenge, can you show me God? But do you have the eyes to see God? You will never see if you haven't the eyes. If immediately the room becomes dark, you cannot even see your hands. So what power do you have to see? We cannot therefore expect knowledge, Veda, with these imperfect senses. With all these deficiencies in conditioned life, we cannot give perfect knowledge to anyone. Nor are we ourselves perfect. Therefore, we accept the Vedas as they are. This is one of the desires of the conditioned soul. He would like to be the friend of everywhere. This is mentioned in Gita, in the fifth chapter. Krishna says that he actually is the best friend of everybody, in the famous peace formula, 5:29, I mean. Bhaktaram yagi tapasam, yeah, this one, this verse. Sukhidam sarva dehina. Krishna is the best friend, it's not us. And as the best friend, he can help to eradicate sufferings of the living entities in this material world. It's not us, by our speculative knowledge and theories. We cannot do this. We have to admit, we have to give credit to God. He can help suffering humanity. It's not us. We can assist Krishna in this mission, but we are not the... We're neither the origin of this knowledge, nor we do it. So we cannot give perfect knowledge to anyone, Sri Prabhupada says, in our conditioned state. You may call... Okay, this ends the one of the section, the first section of the introduction. Some questions? We go on. You may call the Vedas Hindu, but Hindu is a foreign name. We are not Hindus. Our real identification is Varnashrama. This is interesting. Our real, you can say, designation is Varnashrama. So real and designation, there is contradiction between these two. Usually we don't take a designation as something real. But what Srila Prabhupada means here is that if you want to take any stand in this material world and to identify as anybody here, this is the social structure given by God Himself, Varnashram. And this is the system that will work because it is designed by Him. Varnashrama denotes the followers of the Vedas, those who accept the human society in 8 divisions of Varna and Ashrama. There are 4 divisions of society and 4 divisions of spiritual life. This is called Varna Ashrama. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, these divisions are everywhere because they are created by God. The divisions of society are Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra. So there is this wrong idea that this applies only to India and to the Vedic society, Varnashrama. But actually, we can see everywhere Varnashrama in this sense, in these divisions of 8 divisions of people. Everywhere, even outside of India, in the Western world. The only difference is that there is not so, it's not scientific, but they exist. Srila Prabhupada mentioned this several times in different books, here also, in Ishupanishad. But everywhere you can find Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, everywhere there is intellectual class of people, everywhere there are some kind of priests, and everywhere we find administrators. There are everywhere people who generate economics, make money, and the rest. So it's something universally applied. So Brahmana refers to the very intelligent class of men, those who know what is Brahman. Similarly, the Kshatriyas, the administrative group, are the next intelligent class of men. Then the Vaishyas, the mercantile group. These natural classifications are found everywhere. This is the Vedic principle, and we accept it. Vedic principles are accepted as axiomatic truth, for there cannot be any mistake. That is acceptance. So, all these talks about are the Vedas right or not, we don't accept this kind of discussion. The only discussion we accept as devotees is how the Vedas are right, how they are, can be applied in our life, and how we can take advantage and go back home to Godhead following the Vedas. But we don't discuss are the Vedas right or not. At least not inside the devotional environment. If someone brings in this discussion, it means he's not really taking at the moment a stand of a devotee. You cannot doubt the Vedas and pretend to be a devotee. This is what Srila Prabhupada said once when some of his disciples, he left the movement because I think it was because of the fifth canto, these descriptions there of the universe. And Srila Prabhupada commented, I can understand if they doubt me, but how can you doubt Shastra? Unacceptable. So Vedic principles are accepted as axiomatic truth, for there cannot be any mistake. That is acceptance. For instance, in India, cow dung is accepted as pure, and yet cow dung is the stool of an animal. In one place, you'll find the Vedic injunction that if you touch stool, you have to take a bath immediately. But in another place, it is said that the stool of a cow is pure. If you smear cow dung in an impure place, that place becomes pure. With our ordinary sense, we can argue. This is contradictory. So this point here is also very important. This is what is going on in our society and outside. Very often, people read Bhagavatam and other shastras, and they find contradictions. And they think they find contradictions. And then they try to resolve these contradictions. They cannot. They try to speculate. And this creates doubt. And some of them, many of them just leave the movement because of this. And they don't continue their devotional service. And here Srila Prabhupada gives the example how it's actually not a contradiction. They are not contradictions in the Vedas. It's just a matter of realizations, how we can to be able to understand them. So the cow dung is a classical example. So if we find contradiction and we cannot resolve it ourselves, we must ask for assistance from someone who has the knowledge and realization to help us. This is what Sotra Maharaj always was giving this example. When a sincere disciple asks a question, what happens actually is that he goes to the guru and he actually presents his heart to the guru. And he tells the guru, look, here I have some spot on my heart. Oh, please polish it, clean it, so that I can continue with my devotional service. This is the process of asking questions, sincere questions, with humble attitude and with desire to render service. So, one of the functions of the intelligence is that you you are able to find contradictions, because intelligence always finds the similarities and the differences. So it is natural if we, while reading Shastra, we find statements that sound contradictory, but we should ask for assistance if we cannot resolve it by ourselves.
Yes. One of the obstacles to asking questions is that you don't appear foolish.
Yeah, this is my problem also. I asked Maharaj once about this. He said this is the price to pay if you want to attain knowledge. And if you don't want to pay this price, then you don't have the knowledge. You don't get it. And he gave the example of why the kids they are learning so quickly, because they don't have this whole system. They're not, when they have questions, they just ask. And they don't care if they are going to be ashamed. But adults, we have this strong tendency. And another thing is, if you notice, when someone asks a seemingly stupid question, then everybody in the all the devotees, they immediately start to listen very carefully, because this is the question they will want to ask, but they are ashamed. So it's a problem.
Yes.
As I understand, Śrīla Prabhupāda says here, to err is human. To commit mistakes, this is nature, it's human nature. And we see, even in the spiritual world, they make mistakes. The perfect beings in the spiritual world, the gopis, they also make mistakes.
What is mistake?
To give definition of mistake, well, I can try, but okay, that means you have a goal, but and you want to attain your goal, but because of some misinterpretation of the environment and things that happen around you, you make wrong decisions, and this decision is preventing you from attaining your goal. That means your sambandha was not correct, and when sambandha is not correct, then naturally the process of attaining the goal won't be correct, and then you won't attain prayojana. As far as if Gandhi, you ask if Gandhi would not go to this, then according to his karma, something else would happen. He would be his karma will reach finally. But this is just giving us an example that even the great person as Gandhi is prone to commit mistakes. This is natural. That means we have to be humble and accept the whole purpose of giving this, of talking about these four defects, is to make us humble and to understand that we cannot define our goal of life, and we cannot define neither the goal neither the process, and we cannot also understand who we are on our own, because we have these four defects, and we have to accept the knowledge of the Vedas. We can take it in this way also, because the perfect devotees, they also commit mistakes, but it doesn't mean that they are not perfect, because they know the goal of life and they are perfect in their love and their devotional service, but still they can commit some mistake. It doesn't make them imperfect in any way. Mistake means that Krishna has some idea about your life, but you have different idea and you want to do your own thing, not listening to Shastra, and you can take it also in this mistake.
Can you kindly clarify this apparent contradiction? So it says here that, so what power do you have? We cannot therefore expect knowledge, Veda, with these imperfect senses. And the first paragraph says that any knowledge you accept is Veda. So much knowledge that we generally accept is coming from such an imperfect sources. So it seems contradictory.
So in other words, your question is like in Krishna book, one of the chapters is called The Prayers of the Personified Vedas, and there is the question there is how it is possible to attain perfect knowledge by imperfect senses. Is this the question? Because words, we are talking words now, this is a book and there are words here, and these are material, this material object, and words, language is imperfect, and how it is possible to transmit perfect knowledge through imperfect apparatus that we have. Is this the question?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm asking, in what category is this so-called knowledge that we get from imperfect souls? Because it is, from Prabhupada says that this imperfect knowledge is not Veda, but from other point of view, any knowledge you accept is Veda.
So, the knowledge, there is the one knowledge, one body of knowledge, which is called Veda. So when it is, there are two divisions. One is called para vidya, transcendental knowledge, and apara. It's apara means knowledge about this material world, which is connected to Krishna. For example, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives us an example of Paravidya, Vedanta Sutra. And Aparavidya, the knowledge about matter, we see in sciences like Ayurveda and other Shastras, Dhanurveda, stuff like this. So when it is connected to Krishna, then it's accepted as spiritual knowledge and it's uplifting. When it is disconnected from Krishna, then it is just material knowledge which leads to bondage. The same knowledge, the same body of knowledge, can be uplifting or degrading. So, your question, how to accept this knowledge which doesn't come from a perfect source, it depends. If it follows the principles of the Vedas, it can be used. If it's connected, you can connect it to Krishna. But if you don't connect to Krishna, then it might produce some temporary material results, but ultimately, spiritually, will be useless if it's not connected.
So this first sentence, with any knowledge, is a generic statement.
Which statement?
With any knowledge you accept is better. Do I understand properly?
General statement meaning? What do you mean by general statement? General statement. What do you mean?
Then, if we can like go further, we accept it if it is in accordance with actual benefits.
Any knowledge that works is Veda. Any knowledge is Veda. Any knowledge that works, that produces results in the material world is Veda. Because only Krishna knows how this material world works. And he gives the knowledge by which you can operate this material world. And if you connect this with him, this is good for you. If you just use it to operate this world, it will still work, but you won't get the spiritual benefit. Something like this.
I say that you classified para and apara vidya, and within that classification there's another one which is avidya, which is ignorance. So that's the difference again. That's an avidya is technical knowledge, knowledge about how things work. So it's still also coming from Krishna, but that's something that you're considering. Even apara, avidya, if you remove the ignorance, then you know how to use it, you know how to use some of your propensities. If you go and become a technocrat, then that's the misuse. Well, if you use those skills to serve Krishna, then that avidya then changes the quality. So in that way you can see how it is coming.
The very fact that it works, it comes from Krishna.
This is a lot of reading. Another thing that Swati Maharaj was bringing up was the goal or the means of this course was the vichar, that to study things from different angles of vision. So we can hear, and then and amongst ourselves, if somebody has a slightly different angle of vision and they present that, then that may help us to understand more clearly what has been presented. It's not that it's only one presentation. And when Swati Maharaj and Bhakti Purnamaj would discuss amongst themselves, they were really, things were flying around, but you get a glimpse of how different people can approach the subject in different ways, get different understandings. So it's not as though anything that's spoken is going to be, everybody's going to be able to understand it. We can work on it, we can contemplate it, we can then apply it in life and bring up some more realizations.
Okay, we go on with the cow dung example. In one place you'll find the Vedic injunction that if you touch stool you have to take a bath immediately. But in another place it is said that the stool of a cow is pure. If you smell cow dung in an impure place, that place becomes pure. With our ordinary sense, we can argue this is contradictory. Actually, it is contradictory from the ordinary point of view, but it is not false. It is fact. In Kolkata, a very prominent scientist and doctor analyzed cow dung and found that it contains all antiseptic properties. In India, if one person tells another, "You must do this," the other party may say, "What do you mean? Is this a very injunction that I have to follow, that I have to follow you without any argument?" So Father Maharaj was telling the story how he decided to write one of his books, Substance and Shadow. And the story is very interesting. He was attending a GBC meeting, and on that meeting, Ravindra Swarup Prabhu was giving a talk to the GBC members. And he explained, he was giving a report, how do the devotees in ISKCON take decisions in their life, in their lives? What is the motivation? And the conclusion was that majority of the devotees decide what to do in their life based on anumana and pratyaksha, on their mental, on their thinking, reasoning, and on the things they can assess by their senses. And once Father Maharaj heard this, he was shocked, and then he decided to write this book, Substance and Shadow, which deals with Shabda, Praman, Anuman, and Protection. Here we find Srila Prabhupada says that there is no argument. Whatever someone says as a statement has to be supported by the Vedas. Otherwise, it's not accepted. Okay, I think we should end up here. Because it has been a long session, 4 classes. Some of you have attended even more. You? How many classes?
5.
Okay. We'll go on tomorrow. There is no any questions? Okay. Yes?
You also give the essays on Friday?
We'll see about this. Normally, yes. That's it. Friday or maybe we'll skip this week and we'll start with the next. When the month is. We'll let you know. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Dhanam Bhavatu, Dhanam Bhunaktu, Sahadiryam Dharavahai, Tejasvi Navadi Tamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So when Swadharma Maharaj started this course a few years ago, it was actually a Bhagavatam course. But he always had the vision that he wants also Bhakti Shastri course to be developed. And now we are starting finally first year of this Shastra Chakshus course. And as Priti Moshe mentioned, Swadharma Maharaj had this goal. He wanted by the end of the course, the devotees that are attending, So Swadharma Maharaj wanted all the devotees that are attending the course to attain the level of Nishta, as Priti Moshe mentioned. And I remember other things Swadharma Maharaj said in the beginning, that the goal of this course is to revive what is called Svata Siddha Gyan, the knowledge that is actually innate in everybody's heart, because the soul is Sat Chitananda, and we have all the spiritual knowledge inside our heart. So by purifying ourselves, by in the association of the devotees in the holy dham and studying the scriptures, we actually are supposed to revive this knowledge and to experience the bliss of Krishna consciousness and our eternal relationship with Krishna. So this is the goal of this course, to purify ourselves and to realize ourselves as blissful, eternal servants of Sri Sri Radha Krishna. And because I assume nobody read the introduction of Vishupanishad for today. So today we'll just go through the introduction. And from tomorrow we'll start to discuss a little bit more here and there some points that are important. So as we all heard, we'll have four lectures a week, and you are required to carry this book with you, Vishupanishad. You have to, if you don't have, you have to buy one, carry it with you, read ahead a chapter or a mantra. And it's always nice to have it with you during the class, because you can have, you can check out, you can read. Some of you will be also asked to read from time to time. So better carry the book with you. And so we start with the introduction, which is called Teachings of the Vedas, delivered as a lecture by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, on October 6th, 1969, at Conway Hall, London, England. Ladies and gentlemen, or Prabhus and Matajis, but Srila Prabhupada actually mentioned that what is the definition of a devotee. He said the devotees are perfect ladies and gentlemen. So it's not wrong. Ladies and gentlemen, today's subject matter is the teachings of the Vedas. What are the Vedas? The Sanskrit verbal root of Veda can be interpreted variously, but the purport is finally one. So there are many meanings. In Sanskrit, we know there are so many meanings of the words. But Srila Prabhupada says here, the final, ultimate meaning is finally one, just one. It's like Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, several times he says, these are the opinions of different people in Bhagavatam also, but this is my opinion. So the final opinion is the opinion of Krishna and his representative. So what are the Vedas, according to Srila Prabhupada? Veda means knowledge. Any knowledge you accept is Veda. For the teachings of the Vedas are the original knowledge. So this is very interesting and serious claim Srila Prabhupada makes here. Let's read it once again. Veda means knowledge. Any knowledge you accept is Veda. For the teachings of the Vedas are the original knowledge. So the implication of this statement is very serious. That means, even if you don't accept, if you don't believe in God, if you don't accept the authority of any scripture, what to speak about Vedas, still, the knowledge you have, the knowledge that you're using to achieve your goals in the material world, this knowledge is Veda. Even if you're not aware of this. What does it mean? That means that even without knowing, we are using the knowledge given by God in the beginning of creation. If anything in this world works, if we are successful in any field of activity, this is because we are using unconsciously, or consciously better, the principles that God actually created and on which He created this world. So any knowledge we are using, there is no knowledge independent from the Vedas. This is the implication. So if whether we will be able to make this connection back to trace the knowledge, every knowledge we use in our day-to-day life back to the Vedas, this is another question. Not everybody is able to do this. To be able to do this, it requires a high level of realization in Krishna consciousness. But at least theoretically, we should know, we should be convinced. what Śrīla Prabhupāda says here. Any knowledge you accept is Veda. That means, in a sense, stealing, for example, is not good. Everybody knows stealing is not good. But how to steal? There is a proper way to steal. It's also kind of science. So if you want to steal, there are a few things. First, the best thing is that nobody knows that you stole anything away. Nobody knows. You steal something, nobody understands that something has been stolen. That's first class. So you can just go on with your life, enjoy the thing you have stolen. So next best is they understand that it's stolen, but they don't know who stole it. So they cannot actually make the connection between the stealing and you. So the second best. And the third best is they know something has been stolen, they know that you did the criminal act, but they cannot punish you. They are not in the position to punish you. That's third best. So stealing means you take something away from someone else, that belongs to someone else, but you get away with it. You're not punished. So this is the science behind it. And this science is given by God. This is creation. This creation is God's creation. So He establishes all these rules. So even if you want to be successful in stealing, you have to follow these rules that Krishna creates. So this is the implication of this statement: Vedas are the original knowledge, and any knowledge you accept is Veda. Doesn't matter if you believe in Veda or not. Yes.
Can you give an example on modern speculative atomic science?
Atomic science meaning
like
quantum
what is inside
quantum
the
mechanics.
Oh.
Yes, of course. For example, if you want to become a scholar, the famous in this field of whatever it is, whatever it is, yes. You have to follow certain rules, isn't it? You should apply for university, then you should finish. You should follow certain discipline inside this institution. You should follow authority there. Is that correct? You should follow the teacher, the professor. They teaching, you follow. Then when you reach the phase of writing your PhD, then they tell you how to do it. If you don't do it according to your professor, how they call this, advisor or whatever it is, if you don't write it in a certain way, then you cannot become a PhD. So you have to follow the principle of authority, following the authority behind this scene there that they have. So this principle got established. You have to follow authority. If you want to be successful, you have to follow. It doesn't matter which field you want to achieve success. You have to follow authority. And then also while you are doing this, you have to be self-controlled. There are so many things you would like to do at the moment. You don't want to sit 6 hours in the library and study physics or whatever it is. You don't feel like it. You have to control your mind. You have to renounce all these thoughts and focus on your goal. So this is determination. What was it? There are two things. Focus and determination, they bring result. This is Vedic principle also. So you cannot escape these things. Everywhere you go, you have to follow the rules that Krishna established for this world. And then you have success in any field. So these are the principles established in the Vedas. Is this good enough? In the conditioned state, our knowledge is subjected to many deficiencies. The difference between a conditioned soul and a liberated soul is that the conditioned soul has four kinds of defects. So what are these four kinds of defects? You know? First?
Imperfect senses.
Imperfect senses.
Excuse me?
Okay.
Cheating
propensity. Then third?
Subject to illusion.
Subject to illusion. Okay. And cheating propensity was not you mentioned. And?
Making mistakes.
Okay. The difference, okay, the first defect is that he must commit mistakes. So here Srila Prabhupada makes this comparison between the perfect knowledge of the Vedas that we attain through the descending process from the spiritual world and our own erroneous ideas about the material world and the spiritual world and God. So the Vedic knowledge is perfect and our ability to know is imperfect. And it is imperfect in four ways. First, we must commit mistakes. For example, in our country, Mahatma Gandhi was considered to be a very great personality, but he committed many mistakes. Srila Prabhupada mentioned another mistake. Mahatma Gandhi, even at the last stage of his life, his assistant warned Mahatma Gandhi, "Don't go to the New Delhi meeting. I have some friends and I have heard there is danger." But he did not hear. He persisted in going and was killed. Even great personalities like Mahatma Gandhi, President Kennedy, there are so many of them, make mistakes. To err is human. This is one defect of the conditioned soul. So this is the first problem if we try to come up with some ideas about the goal of life and about our situation in this world, is that we make mistakes. And even if we are very sincerely believing in our opinion, it still can be wrong. It doesn't prove anything that we're fully committed to our beliefs. Like the communists in my country, they were, many of them were fully committed and they had very high ideals. They firmly believed that this is the proper way to do things, and still they were proven they were wrong. And so many people suffered because of this. But it doesn't prove anything if you're convinced. Because we are human and humans, and to err is human. Another defect, to be illusioned. Illusion means to accept something which is not Maya. Maya means what is not. Everyone is accepting the body as a self. If I ask you what you are, you will say, "I am Mr. John, I am a rich man, I am this, I am that." All these are bodily identifications. But you are not this body. This is illusion. This is another big problem in the world today, is that people usually they don't make this distinction between what is explained in Bhagavad Gita in the 13th chapter, Kshetra and Kshetragya. They cannot understand which is what is what. And they think I'm the field of activity and I'm not the knower of the field. They cannot make the distinction between the soul and the body. And because they are in illusion, they treat everybody around themselves, everybody else, they treat in the same way. And this has been noted by many scholars and philosophers. People tend to deal with everybody else as, say, part of their field of activities. They just like objects of their sense identification. They don't consider anybody else as a person, as a soul. It's just another object that I can grab and control and enjoy. And they deal like this even with the living beings, mainly with the humans, not to speak about animals and okay, other creatures. So this is a big problem, because in this way they don't have any real relationship with anybody. They go directly down to the level of anamaya, or mostly pranamaya consciousness. The only thing that exists in creation is me and my senses, and the goal of life is to connect my senses with sense objects. And if these sense objects are people living a life, thinking, feeling, it doesn't matter. Most important thing is I have to enjoy. So this is a problem coming from this misidentification. To be an illusion, to think that you're the body. And the third defect is the cheating propensity. Everyone has the propensity to cheat others. Although a person is fool number one, he poses himself as very intelligent. Although it is already pointed out that he is an illusion and makes mistakes, he will theorize. I think this is this, and this is this. But he does not know even his own position. He writes books of philosophy, although he is defective. That is the disease. That is cheating. So you notice here Srila Prabhupada doesn't use cheating in a sense of cheating people for money. It's not the biggest problem. The biggest problem, big problem is to cheat people concerning the goal of life, and to pose as someone who is very learned, and to preach to them. Although you yourself, you don't know who you are, Srila Prabhupada says here. But he does not even know his own position. That means if we don't have firm stand in Sambandha, we don't know who we are and what is our relationship with anything, everything else, then our process and our goal won't be correct. So this is the first thing to establish Sambandha Gyan. And lastly, our senses are imperfect. We are very proud of our eyes. Often someone will challenge, "Can you show me God?" But do you have the eyes to see God? You will never see if you haven't the eyes. If immediately the room becomes dark, you cannot even see your hands. So what power do you have to see? We cannot therefore expect knowledge, Veda, with these imperfect senses. With all these deficiencies in conditioned life, we cannot give perfect knowledge to anyone. Nor are we ourselves perfect. Therefore, we accept the Vedas as they are. This is one of the desires of the conditioned soul. He would like to be the friend of everywhere. This is mentioned in Gita, in the fifth chapter. Krishna says that he actually is the best friend of everybody, in the famous peace formula, 5:29, I mean. Bhaktaram Yagitapasam, yeah, this one. This verse. Sukhidam Sarva Dehina. Krishna is the best friend. It's not us. And as the best friend, he can help to eradicate sufferings of the living entities in this material world. It's not us by our speculative knowledge and theories. We cannot do this. We have to admit and we have to give credit to God. He can help suffering humanity. Not us. We can assist Krishna in this mission, but we are not the, we're neither the origin of this knowledge nor we do it. So we cannot give perfect knowledge to anyone, Srila Prabhupada says, in our conditioned state. You may call, okay, this ends the one of the section, the first section of the introduction. Some questions? We go on. You may call the Vedas Hindu, but Hindu is a foreign name. We are not Hindus. Our real identification is Varnashrama. This is interesting. Our real, you can say, designation is Varnashrama. So real and designation, there is contradiction between these two. Usually we don't take a designation as something real. But what Srila Prabhupada means here is that if you want to take any stand in this material world and to identify as anybody here, this is the social structure given by God Himself, Varnashram. And this is the system that will work because it is designed by Him. Varnashrama denotes the followers of the Vedas, those who accept the human society in 8 divisions of Varna and Ashrama. There are 4 divisions of society and 4 divisions of spiritual life. This is called Varna Ashrama. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, these divisions are everywhere because they are created by God. The divisions of society are Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra. So there is this wrong idea that this applies only to India and to the Vedic society, Varnashrama. But actually we can see everywhere Varnashrama in this sense, in these divisions of 8 divisions of people. Everywhere, even outside India, in the Western world. The only difference is that there is not so, it's not scientific, but they exist. Srila Prabhupada mentioned this several times in different books, here also, in Ishupanishad. But everywhere you can find Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, everywhere there is intellectual class of people, everywhere there are some kind of priests, and everywhere we find administrators, there are everywhere people who generate economics, make money, and the rest. So it's something universal, universally applied. So Brahmana refers to the very intelligent class of men, those who know what is Brahman. Similarly, the Kshatriyas, the administrator group, are the next intelligent class of men. Then the Vaishyas, the mercantile group. These natural classifications are found everywhere. This is the Vedic principle and we accept it. Vedic principles are accepted as axiomatic truth, for there cannot be any mistake. That is acceptance. So all these talks about are the Vedas right or not, we don't accept this kind of discussion. The only discussion we accept as devotees is how the Vedas are right, how they can be applied in our life, and how we can take advantage and go back home to Godhead following the Vedas. But we don't discuss are the Vedas right or not. At least not inside the devotional environment. If someone brings in this discussion, it means he's not really taking at the moment a stand of a devotee. You cannot doubt the Vedas and pretend to be a devotee. This is what Srila Prabhupada said once when some of his disciples, he left the movement because, I think it was because of the 5th canto, these descriptions there of the universe. And Srila Prabhupada commented, I can understand if they doubt me, but how can you doubt Shastra? This is unacceptable. So Vedic principles are accepted as axiomatic truth, for there cannot be any mistake. That is acceptance. For instance, in India, cow dung is accepted as pure, and yet cow dung is the stool of an animal. In one place, you find the venom injection that if you touch stool, you have to take a bath immediately. But in another place, it is said that the stool of a cow is pure. If you smear cow dung in an impure place, that place becomes pure. With our ordinary sense, we can argue. This is contradictory. So this point here is also very important. This is what is going on in our society and outside. Very often, people read Bhagavatam and other shastras and they find contradictions. And they think they find contradictions. And they try to resolve these contradictions. They cannot. They try to speculate. And this creates doubt. And some of them, many of them just leave the movement because of this. And they don't continue with their devotional service. And here Srila Prabhupada gives the example how it's actually not a contradiction. They are not contradictions in the Vedas. It's just a matter of realizations, how we can to be able to understand them. So the cow dung is classical example. So if we find contradiction and we cannot resolve it ourselves, we must ask for assistance from someone who has the knowledge and the realization to help us. This is what Sotra Maharaj always was giving this example. When a sincere disciple asks a question, what happens actually is that he goes to the guru and he actually presents his heart to the guru, and he tells the guru, look, here I have some spot on my heart. Oh, please polish it, clean it, so that I can continue with my devotional service. This is the process of asking questions, sincere questions, with humble attitude and with desire to render service. So, one of the functions of the intelligence is that you are able to find contradictions, because intelligence always finds the similarities and the differences. So it is natural if we, while reading Shastra, we find statements that sound contradictory, but we should ask for assistance if we cannot resolve it by ourselves.
One of the obstacles to asking questions is that you don't appear foolish.
Yeah, this is my problem also. I asked Maharaj once about this. He said, this is the price to pay if you want to attain knowledge. And if you don't want to pay this price, then you don't have the knowledge. You don't get it. And he gave the example of why the kids they are learning so quickly, because they don't have this policy. They're not, when they have questions, they just ask, and they don't care if they are going to be ashamed. But adults, we have this strong tendency. And another thing is, if you notice, when someone asks a seemingly stupid question, then everybody in the all the devotees they immediately start to listen very carefully, because this is the question they will want to ask, but they are ashamed. So it's a problem. Yes.
This is, yes, okay. Speaking about this mistake, making mistakes, yes, what is
mistake? What is the meta mistake? Somehow I know that nothing happens without Krishna's will, and in the second part, it says that if you think that someone is responsible for his false action, this is also not proper understanding and so on. So I can tomorrow tell you for sure which one. This doesn't match in my head. So what means to make mistake? So especially with this example, does it mean that if Mahatma Gandhi wouldn't go to that meeting, history would be changed? How could he not go, and then why this big mistake?
Well, as I understand, Śrīla Prabhupāda says here, to err is human. To commit mistakes, this is nature, it's human nature. And we see, even in the spiritual world, they make mistakes. The perfect beings in the spiritual world, the gopis, they also make mistakes.
What is mistake?
To give definition of mistake, well, I can try, but... Okay, that means you have a goal, and you want to attain your goal, but because of some misinterpretation of the environment and things that happen around you, you make wrong decision, and this decision is preventing you from attaining your goal. That means your sambandha was not correct, and when sambandha is not correct, then naturally the process of attaining the goal won't be correct, and then you won't attain prayojana. And as far as if Gandhi, you ask if Gandhi would not go to this, Then, according to his karma, something else would happen. His karma will reach him finally. But this is just giving us an example that even the great person as Gandhi is prone to commit mistakes. This is nature. That means we have to be humble and accept the whole purpose of giving this, talking about these four defects, is to make us humble and to understand that we cannot define our goal of life, and we cannot define neither the goal, neither the process, and we cannot also understand who we are on our own, because we have these four defects, and we have to accept the knowledge of the Vedas. We can take it in this way also, because the perfect devotees, they also commit mistakes, but it doesn't mean that they are not perfect, because they know the goal of life, and they are perfect in their love and their devotional service, but still they can commit some mistake. It doesn't make them imperfect in any way. Mistake means that Krishna has some idea about your life, but you have different idea and you want to do your own thing, not listening to Shastra, and you can take it also in this mistake.
Can you kindly clarify this apparent contradiction? So it says here that, so what power do you have? We cannot therefore expect knowledge, Veda, with these imperfect senses. And the first paragraph says that any knowledge you accept is Veda. So much knowledge that we generally accept is coming from such an imperfect sources. So it seems contradictory.
So So, in other words, your question is like in Krishna book, one of the chapters is called The Prayers of the Personified Vedas, and there is the question there is how it is possible to attain perfect knowledge by imperfect senses. Is this the question? Because words, we are talking words now, this is a book, and there are words here, and these are material, and this material object, and words, language is imperfect, and how it is possible to transmit perfect knowledge through imperfect apparatus that we have. Is this the question?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm asking, in what category is this so-called knowledge that we get from imperfect souls? Because it is from Prabhupada says that this imperfect knowledge is not Veda, but from other point of view, any knowledge you accept is Veda.
So, the knowledge, there is the one knowledge, one body of knowledge, which is called Veda. So when it is, there are two divisions. One is called para vidya, transcendental knowledge, and apara. It's apara means knowledge about this material world, which is connected to Krishna. For example, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives us an example of paravidya, Vedanta Sutra. And aparavidya, the knowledge about matter, we see in sciences like Ayurveda and other shastras, Dhanurveda, stuff like this. So when it is connected to Krishna, then it's accepted as spiritual knowledge, and it's uplifting. When it is disconnected from Krishna, then it is just material knowledge which leads to bondage. The same knowledge, the same body of knowledge, can be uplifting or degrading. So, your question, how to accept this knowledge which doesn't come from a perfect source, it depends. If it follows the principles of the Vedas, it can be used. If it's connected, you can connect it to Krishna. But if you don't connect it to Krishna, then it might produce some temporary material results, but ultimately, spiritually, will be useless if it's not connected.
So this first sentence, with any knowledge, is a generic statement.
Which statement?
This any knowledge you accept is better. Do I understand properly?
General statement meaning? What do you mean by general statement? General statement. What do you mean?
Then, if we can like go further, we accept it if it is in accordance with actual principles.
Any knowledge that works is Veda. Any knowledge is Veda. Any knowledge that works, that produces results in the material world is Veda. Because only Krishna knows how this material world works. And he gives the knowledge by which you can operate this material world. And if you connect this with him, this is good for you. If you just use it to operate this world, it will still work, but you won't get the spiritual benefit. Something like this.
Can I say that you classified para and apara vidya, and within that classification there's another one which is avidya, which is ignorance. So that's the difference again. But, and avidya is technical knowledge, knowledge about how things work. So it's still also coming from Krishna, but that's something that you're considering. Even apara, avidya, if you remove the ignorance, then you know how to use it, you know how to use some of your propensities. If you go and become a technocrat, then that's the misuse. Well, if you use those skills to serve Krishna, then that avidya then changes the quality. So in that way you can see how it's coming.
to the very extent that it works, it comes from Krishna.
This is a part of reading. Another thing that Swati Maharaj was bringing up is the goal or the means of this course was the vichar, that to study things from different angles of vision. So we can hear, and then down amongst ourselves, if somebody has a slightly different angle of vision and they present that, then that might help us to understand more clearly what has been presented. It's not that it's only one presentation. And when Swati Maharaj and Bhakti Purnamaj would discuss amongst themselves, they were really, things were flying around, but you get a glimpse of how different people can approach the subject in different ways, get different understandings. So it's not as though anything that's spoken is going to be, everybody's going to be able to understand it. We can work on it, we can contemplate it, we can then apply it in our life and bring up some more realizations.
Okay, we go on with the Kaldank example. In one place you find the Vedic injunction that if you touch stool you have to take a bath immediately. But in another place it is said that the stool of a cow is pure. If you smell Kaldank in an impure place, that place becomes pure. With our ordinary sense, we can argue this is contradictory. Actually, it is contradictory from the ordinary point of view, but it is not false. It is fact. In Kolkata, a very prominent scientist and doctor analyzed cow dung and found that it contains all antiseptic properties. In India, if one person tells another, "You must do this," the other party may say, "What do you mean? Is this a very injunction that I have to follow, that I have to follow you without any argument?" Swadhar Maharaj was telling the story how he decided to write one of his books, Substance and Shadow. And the story is very interesting. He was attending a GBC meeting, and on that meeting, Ravindra Swarup Prabhu was giving a talk to the GBC members, and he explained, he was giving a report, how do the devotees in ISKCON take decisions in their life, what is the motivation, and the conclusion was that majority of the devotees decide what to do in their life based on anumana and pratyaksha, on their mental, on their thinking, reasoning, and on the things they can assess by their senses. And when Swadhar Maharaj heard this, he was shocked, and then he decided to write this book, Substance and Shadow, which deals with Shabda, Praman, Anuman, and Protection. Here we find Srila Prabhupada says that there is no argument. Whatever someone says as a statement has to be supported by the Vedas. Otherwise, it's not accepted. Okay, I think we should end up here. Because it has been a long session, 4 classes. Some of you have attended even more. You? How many classes?
5.
Okay. We'll go on tomorrow. There is no questions. Okay. Yes.
You also give the essays on Friday.
We'll see about this. Normally, yes. That's it. Friday, or maybe we'll skip this week and we'll start with the next. When the month is. We'll see. We'll let you know. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Rama.